Absolute Radio Country is filled with the best sounds from Nashville 24 hours a day. But even we can't fit in everything. You'll find a full story right here. This is Country Music Talk, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the world of country music.
Welcome to the Country Music Talk podcast, where you can hear the biggest names in country music telling the stories behind their songs, sharing the latest news, and giving us all the gossip on life in Music City and beyond. I'm Baylen Leonard, and you can catch me on Absolute Radio Country. Listen on DAB Radio in the UK, on the free Rayo app, or you can just ask your smart speaker to play Absolute Radio Country. Right. Let's get on with the podcast.
This is the Country Music Talk Podcast from Absolute Radio Country.
Marty Seward, I couldn't be more pleased to have you back in the UK. The most dapper man in country music, not letting me down with a fantastic outfit on today. Welcome, sir.
It is nice to be back. Now, last time I saw you was at Long Roads Festival?
It was, yes.
That was a big festival.
It was a fun festival. I was so pleased you played it. It was a good one. And we've had a Long Road since then as well. I think it was the year before that you were here, wasn't it?
I think it was.
But then you have been back since, because then I saw you. Weren't you over with Chris Stapleton?
We played at the O2 with Chris Stapleton.
Yes, I saw you there. It was fantastic.
What amazes me when I go to the O2, I guess that's probably the subtotal of it all, is how many country fans are in the UK now.
I mean,
there's always been an audience, but it's like big now, right?
Absolutely, it is. And country has been for quite a few years now in the UK the fastest growing music genre of them all, and continues. And yeah, when you do things like the Long Road and how big that is, and C2C and how big that is, and people coming out for Chris Stapleton and other artists that they love. I mean, you have had a long love affair with not only the Opry, which is why you're here at the moment, and we'll talk about that, but you've had a long love affair with the UK, haven't you?
I have.
Throughout your career.
The first time I came here was in the early 80s as a member of Johnny Cash's band. And I saw a lot of things. I saw with him, you know, he was kind of toward the end of his career in the States. He could still fill up civic arts centers and places like that with senior citizens. But when I'd come over here, he was still a rock star.
Right.
I'd see the second coming. I thought, Johnny Cash can happen again. And which pleased me. But I also saw how much investment that the older country artists had put in on the foundational layer of what we're seeing O2 now, because they worked hard to establish a footprint over here. Mm. So he was one of those guys that I think everybody loved Johnny Cash.
Everybody loves Johnny Cash, and that's something that I say a lot, because obviously we still play Johnny Cash. He's still as relevant today as he ever was. His music still sounds as fresh or as challenging or as outsider, all of those things as it ever did. And a lot of former punks cite Johnny Cash as an inspiration or as one of their favorite artists. When it was actually the 80s and the punk movement was actually at its peak in the UK and you were playing, were you seeing punks in the audience for Johnny Cash? Who were you seeing in the audience?
There was an element of that, you bet. Because, and if you remember, his June's daughter, Carlene, was married to Nick Lowe at the time. And, you know, Nick brought Elvis Costello around and U2 was coming around and some of the other real punk guys were coming around. But John kind of fit everybody's deal. You know, he was one of those artists, just depending on how you look at him, he'd fit your world.
But you kind of do that as well, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I think that what you have going on, equally, you have fans from, like, across the country spectrum, for sure, but across the musical spectrum as well. And you've done so many different styles, and you pay homage to the things before, you push things forward to the future. And so you must see that in your own crowds as well.
We do. And it's always about reseeding. It's always about reseeding and finding, you know, new faces in the crowd.
Yeah.
You have to, but I do not. We worked a tour in the States a couple of years ago with one of my friends, and he had 10 million hits. And he filled up stadiums. And he was one of those guys, but his audience would not let him off of the greatest hits set list.
Oh, right, yeah.
And that would be hell to me because I think you have to keep pushing it forward. Now, the other end of that spectrum is my buddy Bob Dylan. You go to his show, you know, he's pushed it so far forward that it's starting over again. And I love, well, it's a challenge, but there's a balance in that. I love keeping it fresh and moving forward. It's always about the next song.
You certainly do that. And we are going to talk about the Opry, but I just want to talk about Space Junk for a minute because I have playlists and albums and collections of one of my favorite things is instrumentals. I love them. I just love them. And I don't know if that's like a radio thing where I used to think about, you know, what could I use in transitions and stuff like that. But like in my life, when I'm kind of going about my business, whether traveling or at home, just working on something, time and again, I will turn to my instrumental playlists. I think it's because I have a tendency to zero in on lyrics a lot. And when there aren't them, I can zero in on the music and my mind can go somewhere else. And so I couldn't have been more excited when you released Space Junk. And originally it was a limited thing for Record Store Day, but now everybody can get their hands on it, right?
I think October 31st it comes out. And Space Junk is a 20-song instrumental record that the band and I put together. And we thought the world needed a 20-song instrumental record.
I certainly did.
And nobody else did, so we begged to differ. So we've been sitting on this record for like 10 years. And Snake Farm, Dante, saw enough in it that he helped release it. And so I love this record. My band has always played instrumentals. Everybody can play. That's the thing. And every band I've ever been in my life was... whether it was Johnny Cash or Lester Flatt in my formative days, everybody played instrumentals.
Yeah.
It was just a part of the vocabulary of country music. It was a part of the vocabulary of rock and roll. And I think there ought to be some more instrumentals. I love them when they're right. The best show that I've seen this year was Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass.
Okay.
Are celebrating their 60th anniversary of the Whipped Cream and Other Delights album. Do you remember that album cover?
Yeah.
That's the girl, you explain it, sitting there with whipped cream all over her, right?
Yeah, it's today it would be a challenge.
Yeah, but they actually said it was shaving cream. I said, oh, what is it? But so they're touring the 60th anniversary of that album, and they're selling out halls every night in America. And Connie and I went to see them in Cincinnati, Ohio, and it was all instrumentals. They sang one song, and it was so wonderful. It was great.
Yeah, I cannot thank you enough for Space Junk. It's one of my favorite things that has come out in the past decade, easily.
And as one guy said, it's some of the best singing you guys have done.
Your harmonies, mwah, chef's kiss. Hey, let's talk about the Grand Ole Opry live in London at the Royal Albert Hall. That's why you're over here this time. What a special thing this is. We've been talking about it endlessly, happening for the first time ever outside of the US of A. The Grand Ole Opry has come over to the Royal Albert Hall to celebrate its 100-year anniversary. So we talked about your long history with the UK. Let's talk about your long history with the Opry. Do you remember the first time that you played the Opry?
Sure. It was September of 1972, as a kid in Lester Flatt's band. And the Grand Ole Opry was a way of life in our home down in Mississippi growing up. The people that performed on the Opry felt like family members to me, all of us. When Patsy Cline and Hawkshaw Hawkins and Cowboy Copas and Randy Hughes lost their lives and that plane crash in the 60s, early 60s, I remember sitting on my grandmother's knee out in the country listening to the Grand Ole Opry the weekend after the broadcast, and they had a moment of silence, and you could hear people sobbing. And it tore my heart out as a little boy. And I just always felt like the Grand Ole Opry people were my family. So by the time I was 13, I was on the Opry. And when the curtain came up, I went, there it is. There it is. And I knew the feel, I knew the sound, I knew the smell of the place. It was country music at its finest at that time.
And it remains such not only an important and part of the musical landscape, not just the country music landscape, but also, and I talk about this with everyone, how as an audience member who's been many times, you know, growing up in East Tennessee, I always dreamed of just going to the Opry as an audience member.
Sure.
So I think it's one of the few venues on earth where the audience is as excited as the people on the stage, because as long as those artists have been dreaming about getting to the Opry, their audience members who have been saving money and thinking, you know, in years I'll get to go to the Grand Ole Opry, there will be a time when I get to go and experience the Grand Ole Opry. And altogether, it just creates such a magical environment. And I think doing it in the UK, there will be people in the UK who dreamed about going to the Opry but thought they would never get to go to the Opry because getting to Nashville isn't as easy as it should be.
Sure.
for everyone. And so for them, it will be that same vibe, I think.
Well, to your point, the audience is just as much a part of the show as what's going on stage.
Mm.
It's a radio show, right?
Yeah.
And so the response from the audience has so much to do with what happens on that stage. But I'm with you. It's a once it for anything to last in show business for 10 years is 20 years.
Yes.
I mean, that's pretty big. But for 100 years, I mean, UK specializes in, you know, long haul things like that. But this is a big deal.
Yeah,
it
is.
For the Grand Ole Opry to suit up and come over to the UK. And I think the Royal Albert Hall is a perfect place to stage it.
You must know the Royal Albert Hall quite well.
Played there a couple of times. I think it has a kind of a common heart and soul factor as the Ryman Auditorium. Both of those old houses have seen it all.
Yeah.
And have welcomed so many different styles and, you know, things down through the years. So I think the Royal Albert Hall is the perfect place to stage the Grand Ole Opry over here.
I agree with you. A bit more red velvet than we're used to, but it's at the Opry. But it's such a, like the Opry, it's huge, but feels so intimate as well.
Right.
Hey, before I let you go, are you still collecting stuff? Because you've got this huge collection. You've been talking about having a standalone museum.
That's happening.
Is it happening?
Dust is flying right now in Philadelphia, Mississippi. We're building a cultural center. And in partnership with, in collaboration in the Country Music Hall of Fame, my entire collection lives there now.
Which is extensive.
That's huge. And so we now have access to their collection and my collection when it's time to keep everything fresh down in Mississippi. So, well, do I collect? Well, things find me.
Yeah, I bet they do.
They do. And the good thing now is I can take it to the Country Music Hall of Fame and go, put your white gloves on and take care of this.
Yes. Out of everything that you have, I think that probably the thing that, because I've seen them, and that people mention the most is probably Patsy Cline's shoes. Her boots, yeah. Is that, in your estimation, what, not valuable, we're not putting value on things, but what's the thing that blows people away the most that you have?
In the collection?
Yeah.
My wife, Connie Smith.
She's part of the collection?
Absolutely.
Well, if it wasn't for her, it wouldn't be, right?
That's true. Man, that's a hard question.
I know, because you have so many
unbelievably
important
things. Jewels of it all. Mm. Johnny Cash's first black suit, or Hank Williams' handwritten lyrics to I Saw the Light.
Yeah.
Patsy's boots that she was wearing when she lost her life. I mean, there's 20,000 plus pieces at that level.
Yeah.
So, pretty cool.
I mean, you know, I don't want to outdo you here, but my mom collects salt and pepper shaker sets, and she has over 1,000. So I'm
That's
just saying,
wonderful.
Hey, it is a joy to see you. I'm so happy you're back.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for coming in to see us. I can't wait to see you on the Royal Albert Hall.
Are you
going to
be there?
Oh, I'm going to be there.
Excellent.
Absolutely. I will see you there. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure.
The Country Music Talk Podcast from Absolute Radio Country.
An in-depth look behind the scenes at the world of country music.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. We'll have another dropping soon for y'all, so don't forget to keep it country.
If you enjoy the Country Music Talk podcast, chances are you'll also enjoy Absolute Radio Country. It's the place where real music matters, and we love country music just as much as you do. You'll find us online on the free Absolute Radio app, on digital radio throughout the UK, or just ask your smart speaker to play Absolute Radio Country.